It is a glorious Friday morning trackside here at Royal Randwick. April 12, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. Good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. Yes, back here at Royal Randwick ahead of day two of the championships. A little bit different to the situation a week ago, that's for sure. With the sun rising, it looks like there's barely a cloud in the sky. Perfect conditions ahead for day two tomorrow. Stacks to talk about this morning. The Masters is underway. We'll cross to Evan Priest a little later in the show over there at Augusta National. Early doors, Bryson DeChambeau, 5-under par through 15 holes, leads as it stands. Aussie Cam Smith has had a really good start. He's 2-under through 7 holes, 3 shots off the pace. Last night in the NRL, entertaining game. The Roosters eked out a victory and a crucial one for them, 22-20 over the Knights in Newcastle. And in the AFL, a really big win for the Brisbane Lions. Going to the MCG and beating the Demons, who've been red hot, 22 points the margin there in that one. Big news over in the States today. OJ Simpson, former NFL star, acquitted of double murder, of course, has died of cancer, his family said in a statement, aged 76 in that 1994 car chase. What was it, June 17? In LA, for people in the States, that was a "where were you" moment. As you heard in the intro, Josh Reynolds is with us today. Bulldogs, great. Can I call you a great?
Absolutely not.
He is a great.
Don't ask the Bulldogs fans that one, mate. But no.
Morning.
Very happy to be here. What a morning. Masters on, just watching it, enjoying it. I don't know what's better though, Mido. Masters being on right in front of us, or hearing another Laurie Daly parking story here at Royal Randwick.
This one's not for air.
Please, because I reckon there's, what's that road at the back? If anyone's seen the great Laurie Daly
wandering,
running, running to try and make the gates, it was him.
Hobbling and all.
Morning, Laurie. What happened?
Morning, boys.
Come on. What's happened this time?
Well, I thought I was being cheeky, and I thought I'd park in the wrong spot because I thought that there'd be a gate open, you know, the main entrance, and it wasn't open. And then I had to walk to the car park. I couldn't get into the car park. And then I walked back down to security and asked him which is the best way to get in, and he told me I had to walk back up to the car park. And I'm thinking, geez, rightio. But then I noticed a truck coming out of a gate about 150 metres away.
So you've hightailed
it. I hightailed it. The knees were gone. But I got there at the end. The calf is gone. But I just made it through the sliding gate.
I wonder if the
security... Hopefully the security guy wasn't watching and he's not going to chase me this morning.
Well, I reckon there's a room in the ATC building where the security guys are. I reckon they're just...
Well, he saw me wandering. He saw me wandering. That's why he came out. I hope he didn't see me running to get through the gate.
I did hear, though, when you see an opportunity, you take...
Oh, mate, once you see an opportunity, you go.
Bang, bang, straight in.
Don't hesitate. Yeah. Why does it always happen to me, though?
You find a way.
Oh, mate, I've just got a dickhead written on my face.
Gee,
on my forehead.
How about that shot? I think, was that DeChambeau? He's got the old... Well, he's hooked it, and it's hit the tree and come back nearly onto the fairway. There you go.
Well, you know it's your day.
The golfing gods.
Little bits of luck you like. So, lots of early texts on last night's game. My Knights are, well, I'm not going to say that word, stuffed, Loz. Roosters' outside backs are stronger than our middles. We're too small to compete with the top six sides. No name to that one. What a one-sided refereeing display that was in Newcastle last night. I feel sorry for the Newcastle Knights is another one. So 22-20, 0419767272, by the way, on the text line to have your say. Daniel Tupou scored a double. Joey Manu outstanding at fullback. And Caelan Ponga, certainly in the second half, had some awesome moments as well. In fact, his late break gave them a chance to win the game. And Adam O'Brien, post-match, lamenting that there was no penalty. Would have given them a shot from about 45 out to potentially send the game into extra time. But what did you make of it all, Loz?
I thought it was a decent game of footy. I thought the Roosters showed a lot of character last night after being embarrassed last week with their first half performance against the Bulldogs. Joey Manu was outstanding. There was... referee decisions from both sides that I sort of was there shaking my head with last night. But in the end, I think the best team won. I don't think you can deny that the Roosters were the better team. Yes, they had their moments, Newcastle. If Kalen possibly was fit, it was funny with Kalen because it looked like I don't know whether it was a hip pointer injury or what it was, but it looked like he was gone there at the back end of the first half. But then the second half, he got into the game and nearly pulled the game out of the bag right at the death there with a magic play, with a wonderful run. But it just shows you how much they rely on him, don't they? You know, and even last year when they went on that run, it was all off the back of Kalen. So if you shut Kalen down, that's the concern for Newcastle.
I saw his interview post-match. He said he got some injections at halftime.
Oh, was it hip pointer?
Yeah, he was, pointed down at his hip. So
yeah, well, that's only going to cause discomfort. So there's not a lot of more damage you can do. It's basically like a bruise.
I've had hip, like a couple of bad hip pointers because I had the worst tackling technique in the world, and I'd come in sideways. But I could never get them needled. I don't know what you needle because you can't needle muscle.
Bone, yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, so yeah, I'm interested to see what it actually is, but
I don't think it's a tear because he ran.
It couldn't be a
well
tear.
Towards no way. The end. So it's just a bit bad bruise.
Bad bruise, yeah. So, but he whatever it is, it was a special water at half time. It's like a space jam. It was unbelievable. But he's just, as you said, Loz, he's the key.
Yeah.
You take, honestly, boys, I know it's probably Newcastle fans that want to hear this, but you take him out of that team and the Newcastle haven't got much, especially in attack.
No, you're right. I agree with you 100% there, Jossie. He's such a wonderful player that they rely on him too much, so they've got to find other avenues to be able to create points, and other people have to take a bit more responsibility. Now, even if they take a bit more responsibility, have they got the skill level to actually create those points?
Yeah.
But Joey Manu at the back, just heavily involved. You know, his carries were strong. It just shows you the difference, doesn't it, between a hard-working fullback and a non-hard-working fullback. You know, they're making 20 to 30 carries a game. And not that that's the be-all and end-all, but it just seems like that's the game now, isn't it, for a fullback? It's just more hard-jack. A bit like when the wingers started to get their carries up.
I had a thought last night. I was just laying there in bed after watching Joey Manu, thinking how good he was. I don't think he could do that every week. I'm gonna put like,
well, you're like a running back, aren't you?
The way he plays, it's just him.
Yeah.
He is everywhere. You know what? Last night, if you watch it closely, he actually got in the way sometimes because he wanted to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds silly, but he was pushing on the left, and then he'd push up in the middle, then he'd pop up out on the right, whereas the good fullbacks know, you know, I'll push this play, be at the back of the next play. Mm-hmm. But it's just unbelievable. And I just don't know. We always speak about it, you know, with Tedesco possibly going to the wing and putting Manu there, because they are a different team. You know what I feel like when Manu plays fullback? It's like the shackles are off the Roosters, and they sort of play a bit more like footy.
Yeah,
it's not like so structured, and you know, we're getting to this point and we play the box out the back. It's like, let's see what Joey does, and then we'll play off the back of it. Cheese will get our dummy half off a quick play the ball, and we'll all flood the middle. It's just like they play a sort of a different style when he's at the back.
Yeah, you're probably right there, mate. Because Joey, when he gets the ball, he can stop, turn, come back the other way. He's so big and strong that, like, an example was Smith's try. It was off a Manu play the ball.
Mm.
So without Joey carrying that ball, quick play the ball, Smith doesn't have that space to get out and run. He's got a lovely pass. He's a different style. But if you're making those 30 carries a game week in, week out, eventually it takes a toll on your body. And, you know, he's leaving at the end of the game, end of the season. But the Roosters, I don't know what they do with him. I don't know what they do with him. But one thing they did change last night was they put Swalee back to the wing. And I think a lot of people have been saying for a while that that's his best position. But they've just had to play him there through necessity because Billy Smith's been out injured and Dom Young. I thought it was a good game of footy last night. Newcastle, yes, they had some decisions go against them. But I also thought the Roosters had a couple go against them as well. What was the one with the referee when he said, foul play could be involved here? Someone got tackled and then Tupanua got knocked out.
Oh, yeah.
And he took his advantage. Piers Paul
got under the ball, knock on. Was it a challenge?
No, they didn't. But it was Newcastle took the quick tap. Because they got a penalty. They got a penalty. They took their advantage. And then I reckon he just covered himself up by saying, oh, they didn't take the advantage because it was, and you're not allowed to take a fast tap because it was foul play. And you go back and look at the tackle where he gave the penalty for. I don't even know what that was for.
Yeah, no. It wasn't much.
No, it wasn't foul play. I think he was just trying to go, oh, geez, I don't think they've had taken their advantage here. The crowd's going to give it to me.
Do you know what I liked? I didn't know the rule, I'll be honest. The old dropout. The buzzer.
Oh, the buzzer, yeah.
And then he's like, there's a ball in the bucket, mate. He goes, there's no ball in the bucket. and then the commentators are going, oh, they know there's balls in the bucket. I wouldn't know there's a ball in the bucket. The big KFC bucket, although there was chicken in there for years.
It's an interesting one, just thinking Queensland with Ponga, and someone's texted in, Ponga's a star, being a New South Welshman, we're in trouble. Ponga and Walsh, we are stuffed. No name to that one. But earlier this week, Cameron Munster conceded his fitness with his groin issue. He said he'll be 70 to 80% most games. So if you're 70, 80%, like Billy Slater would have to be thinking, am I going to pick him? Do you pick him when you're 70, 80%? It is Cameron Munster, I know. Mm. And therefore, and Caelan Ponga, you know, naturally asked, would he play anywhere in Origin? Naturally, he said yes. Mm. Could he be tempted to put, if Munster concedes he's not at full fitness, to pick Ponga at 6 in Origin?
Oh, it's something that he could consider, most definitely. But you've got Tom Dearden sitting there. Dearden was wonderful in his Origin debut, and I think he's a better player now than what he was a couple of years ago.
Definitely.
And for me, he just suits the Origin arena. He's just tough and competitive, and, you know, he's not the most skillful player, but I know that blokes would love to play with him. Mm. And I think that's sort of what Queensland would want to reward him with, that because I reckon if you asked plenty of players from that squad that have been involved with Tom Dearden before, they'd say, mate, we want him in the team somewhere.
Mm. The perfect example is that chase down last week or the week before.
A couple of weeks ago.
That's just him to a T. And as you said, I think he really, really understands his role in the team. You never really see him doing much ball playing. He's just around the ball, attacking opportunities when they come.
Yeah.
He's pushing it at every play. He gets back in when Drinkwater catches the ball for the counter-attacking opportunities. He's just that guy that is just always around. And with Munster, I reckon the question is, how many weeks to Origin?
Is it about 6-7 weeks?
6-7 weeks. You've got, for Billy Slater, you've got 6 or 7 weeks, if Munster's only going to be 80%, to see how good a Munster at 80% is. And then you've got to make a decision off of that. Yeah.
The other one with Caelan, and I don't know whether you guys feel the same way, but every time he sort of goes in for a tackle, comes out of a tackle.
Oh, you get nervous.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You're thinking, oh, geez, I hope he hasn't injured himself here or taken a head knock. And if you put him in the front line, as we saw at the start of last year, you just expose him a bit more. And if you're going to an Origin game, and I know it can happen to anyone, but someone with a pre-existing condition that's more susceptible than others, are you prepared to take that risk and throw him into the firing line?
And you know where they're coming, Loz.
Oh, most definitely you know where you're going to send the traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the worst problem to have, though.
No.
Where are we going to put Caelan Ponga?
It's a good problem to have. But you think you've got to have him there somewhere, but where do you play him?
Yeah. The great Tiger Woods is about to tee off at Augusta National. A huge ovation for him as he's introduced. Of course, Jason Day is in this group as well. If you're just tuning in, early doors, Bryson DeChambeau has the lead. 7 under par. He's made another birdie at 17. So 7 under heading into the final hole. He's 3 shots clear of Denny Willett, Ryan Fox the Kiwi, and Byung-Hun Ahn at 4 under par. Tiger has hit, what's he hit
Perfect.
There? A bit of a fade straight down the middle of the fairway. What a drive on the first there from Tiger to open his round, and we'll see Jason Day's tee shot shortly. And, well, it's a good start for Cameron Smith, the Aussie. 2 under through 8 holes so far. Back pages of the papers. Well, Manu of moment, Joey Manu, great performance last night. Ran for nearly 350 metres in the 22-20 win for the Roosters over the Knights. But the South situation just continues. Malfunction. NRL obstacle to Meninga's Bunny's ambition. On the back page of the Herald, Kangaroos or Souths, Meninga's tough choice. And on the back page of the Australian as well, NRL to block Meninga's Souths move. So yesterday, a lot of commentary on this. What's happened to Jason Day? Oh, no.
Oof, not a great start.
Left into the trees and the people.
That was like me at North Ride yesterday. Very left.
It's not a great start.
Yeah, J-Day, not a great tee shot on the first. But so yesterday, well, Mal Meninga said on Sen, he loves the idea of being an interim coach and it interests him, while adding he's got a stack of other commitments. He says he hasn't been approached yet, but he says that he knows there is interest. He did add, though, that he'd be out of the picture if it prevented him from coaching Australia. So this all may amount to nothing, but Loz, a bit of surprise when you heard his comments that it interests him doing this job?
Oh, no, it doesn't surprise me, because I think that most people would be open to having a chat to see what the options were. So in that regard, it doesn't surprise me. In terms of wanting to come to Sydney and coach for 5 or 6 months as an interim, I didn't know whether he'd have an appetite for that, just to leave his family, come down here, live in Sydney, and what would Mal gain out of it? And the fact that it looks like he has to have a choice now between Souths and the Australian team, I don't think he'd be giving up the Australian team. I think the talk about him going to Souths will quieten down now. But you wonder how poor old Jason Demetrio feels, don't you? You know, having a guy now that's been possibly ruled out of taking over your position, does that mean it gives him a game or 2 weeks to be able to sort his future out, to try and get a win on the board? Does it mean something this weekend now that Mal's out of the frame? I just don't know how well this has been handled.
You've been around teams when they've, you know, had a bit going on, Josh. Yeah. Tell us from a player's perspective, what's everyone sort of thinking? What conversations are going on internally? If you can put yourself in the heads of South players at the moment, as they're playing a game tomorrow night against the Sharks.
They should feel like absolute crap, the way what they've dished up for Demetrio. He's gone in the bat for him multiple times. Let's be honest. Demetrio obviously made the choice to get rid of someone like Sam Burgess at that club. Mm. Sam Burgess come out and said that there's something going on at the club that isn't right. It's not that he a couple of quotes was like, it's not the South where I started and whatnot. So, and then we, as you know, the audience were made to pick. Do we think Sam Burgess is just, you know, got cold feet, or do we think that there is something, a culture going on, something wrong at South? And I have to think now it is. Sam Burgess was right. Like it's and Demetrio went into bat for these players. They've obviously had some sort of input into that decision, and now they're walking him out the door. They're holding his hand, walking him out the door, laughing. We were speaking about it before. There was a meeting saying your coach might be getting sacked, and they're walking out of the meeting laughing. Do you know what I really don't like about this? You know what? Whether I got on with a coach, didn't get on with a coach or whatnot, that's his livelihood. That's his life. He's got to feed his family. He's got to... You just got to have... You know, be a nice person. Like, even if he does get the sack, at least, you know, show him some sort of respect.
I know it's the industry we're in, but I'm a bit like you, Grubby, in terms of, the coverage around it. It must be hard on him to focus in on what he needs to do. And he probably can handle it individually, Jason, but it's his family. It's the people that are close to him that are the ones that are really affected. I'm not saying he's not affected, but I think he knows it's part of the territory. But it's just so difficult when you go through a situation where it's played out in the media like this. And, yeah, I agree. You know, you should be respectful of the coach, and you should be respectful of the decision, and he's gone into bat for them a number of times. And, you know, when we're hearing South Sydney talk, they're talking about, oh, yeah, we're in together and we have all these honesty sessions and That's one thing we really worked hard on, being honest with each other. Well, have they? Because it doesn't seem to be working. And I don't know whether they have been really honest with each other. So if they've got each other's back, you'll know this weekend. Because it's time now. All the talking is over. They've got to deliver.
Well, as you can, this is the thing, right? I've been a part of these honesty sessions where 80% of people go into them with the right intentions. Draw a standing line, boys. This is a joke. Like, you know, that's the thing. Demetrio's got this team, right? And if you look at them on paper at the start of the year with Jack Whiten coming, he would have gone, how good is this going to be? Honestly, yeah, he's lost, you know, their front, their forward packs, lost a bit of strike power and whatnot. But you still got some, probably, you know, you've got Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell, Jack Whiten, some of the best players in the game.
Well, you still got three Origin players from last year in their pack. So Cam, they should, Murray, Colin Matangi and Cookie.
They should still be competing. But then there's that 20% of guys that go into the meeting, they nod their head, yep, we're all on board, but then they go and have their little secret meetings to decide.
Yeah.
And it's about, what do you think about that, honestly?
Yeah.
And that right there is the problem.
Yeah.
Whoever that is, going behind Demetrio's back saying this and that, and then they might go to someone higher up, outside at South, and be like, this is what was said in that meeting, and that is a joke. Because whatever happens in those meeting rooms, sometimes it shouldn't go up to the top. Because like you just said, Loz, that little group of people that you got in that team is, you've got to fight your way out. They're not going to help you. Trust me, they're not going to help you sometimes. They say they will, but they're not. What you've got in that little circle is what you need. I just don't think South have got that at the moment.
Jason Day got himself out of trouble on the first hole after driving well left. He's got up and down for par there. Tiger Woods couldn't have played the first hole better. Perfect tee shot, great approach. Birdie, one under par. There was a 2.5 hour delay, by the way, to the start of the Masters today due to the weather overnight. At the moment, Bryson DeChambeau, outstanding opening round, and has a putt for birdie on the last. He is 7 under heading into the last hole of his opening round. 3 shots clear of Denny Willett, former champion, Byung-Hun Ahn of South Korea, and Victor Hovland, also 4 under par. Ryan Fox was 5 under the Kiwi. He's back to 3 under through 16. Cameron Smith still 2 under through 9 holes. Early days for Adam Scott. I saw him at even, just going, trying to find his name in the leaderboard here. Rory McIlroy's even through 9 holes. Yes, Adam Scott even just through 1 hole, as is Jason Day. So no Aussies. It doesn't look like anyone's really bombed out yet, from what I can see. But DeChambeau is the leader. Tiger's just teed off at the second hole. Gone What's he left. Done? And now he's gone well left, has he?
Yeah. Get a bounce, yeah. Tiger. No.
Gee.
Oh, dear.
Won't need that
footwork. He's gone a bit left there on his tee shot.
He'll need my footwork. Found it, fellas.
Again.
We are here at Royal Randwick this morning ahead of day 2 of the championships. Beautiful morning, too. Have a look at it. Michael Wood's going to chat to us soon. Coming off, just an outstanding weekend last weekend, where he and his staff produced a track for the ages, considering the rain that fell. And, they couldn't have better conditions really heading into day 2 tomorrow. And on the back page of the Herald today, just a couple of headlines we didn't get to. Another class, James McDonald talking about Via Sestina, that he could produce something special in the Queen Elizabeth, the feature, the $5 billion feature tomorrow. I wonder if it's in the multi. We'll get to it shortly. And just on the back page of the Courier Mail that we didn't get to, a number one priority, Broncos coach calls for refs to protect superstar fullback from illegal attacks in early return from facial fracture. So Reece Walsh back tonight for the Bronx in the Battle of Brisbane. Also, Jordan Rickey, who went off, hurt his ankle at training on Tuesday. Kevin Walters says he will play. But a bit of a huge blow for the Dolphins, both. And it's a shame for the match, really, that their Broncos recruits in the off-season, Tom Flegler, ruled out. Herbie Farnworth was ruled out earlier in the week. And Kafusi's on the sidelines as well. That's huge, like, disappointments for the Dolphins. Hard to see them winning with those three out, Grubby.
Yeah, it is. And their ex-Broncos boys, would have been good to see them go up against their team. But I don't know. For some reason, I've got a feeling, an inkling, that the Dolphins will just show up. I really do. It's just they're just that. They're just a bit of a gritty team when they want to be. You know, they'll be in the game, but yeah, even a guy like Kaufusi, he sets the tone in defence a lot of the time, in especially in a derby like that. So, what's Kevy speaking about protecting? He's Walshy. Does he feel he gets picked on a bit? Does he?
The only reason he gets picked on would be you're putting a lot of time and effort into him, and you want to make sure that you get physical with him, like you do with most players. And I think Kevy's just trying to, you know, give the ref a bit of a warning shot, like let's protect him so we don't have another injury because we can ill afford to lose him. So, I understand it's all games what they say, but I don't think he needs extra protection. I think players will go out and try and be physical with Reece as they are with all players. As long as they do it within the rules, everything's fine.
The Maltese Open, lots. Day two of the championships, huge one. What have you got for us?
Well, this is what we're going to do, Middo. All right. We're going to start in the Sydney Cup.
Coming off a scratching last week.
Yeah, coming off a scratching, yeah. So we're going to go race 7. Old favourite of mine, number 11, Man Zeus.
One-time derby winner. Victoria derby winner from memory.
So I think he'll run a big race tomorrow. So I've put him in top 4.
Okay.
All right, top 4.
Top 4 Man Zeus Sydney Cup.
Right. And then in the Queen Elizabeth.
Oof.
Race 8. All right.
Race 8.
What are you laughing at, Grubby?
It's just the way you said it. Race 8.
Race 8. I'm trying to put on my race caller voice. Race 8, number 8. Via Sestina. To win.
To win.
To win.
Okay.
And if you want to be a part of the BSB Multi, that's paying
$8. $8. Tab app, tab website, click on sports, and today's offers, $8. The big sports breakfast best, the multi for this week, courtesy of Loz. Remember, what are you really gambling with? For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au. Now, a lot of community footy, if it's not underway, is getting underway this weekend. And there's hardly a bigger comp in community footy than the Newcastle Rugby League. And some of the, former NRL talent running around in this competition is significant. Blake Austin, Blake Ferguson, amongst stacks of others. And they're starting their season, and good on them. They're having a crack at a magic round to start their season at the number 2 sports ground in Newcastle tomorrow. And it all starts from midday. And to tell us all about it and the competition this year, and we're going to talk to a lot of people around community footy in New South Wales and Queensland over the course of the season. Great to have Adam Devcich, the general manager of the Newcastle Rugby League, joining us. Adam, a very good morning to you, mate. How are you?
G'day, Middo. I'm well, mate.
So round 1, magic round. Tell us about the build-up and the support you've had from the Newcastle Rugby League community as well.
Yeah, look, this is a concept we've been trying to get off the ground for 5 or 6 years now, but it's got a lot of momentum over the last few months. So basically, we have our 5 first grade games being played at the same place on the same day. But the cool part is that it comes in the middle of what is basically a craft beer festival. So we'll have 15 craft brewers and a bunch of food vendors and a whole lot of entertainment go with it.
So perfect day to bring the whole family. Starting from midday, what, 5 games back to back?
Yeah, that's it. So the first game kicks off at 12 with the entrance and lakes. And the last game is kicks off at 7 between West and Central. So it's 9 hours of footy and 9 hours of, potentially 9 hours of beer drinking.
That sounds good. I might make my way up there.
Absolutely.
But congratulations, Adam. I think it's a wonderful idea. And also the fact that Newcastle has always been a strong area for rugby league, but the attraction of having former NRL players playing in the local competition, that must be a huge bonus for you.
Yeah, absolutely. The clubs have done a really good job of recruiting some great talent. As you mentioned, Blake Austin, he's come back from Super League. Dave Fafita's also playing at the entrance, so he's back for his second year. Will Smith has come back to his junior club at West Newcastle. So they're just a few. The old Ross dog, Nathan Ross, he's put the boots back on as well, so he'll be at West as well. So the clubs have done a really good job of recruiting some really great talent Plus, we've had some guys that have been in the comp for a year or two now that are that have stuck around. So Brock Lamb, he'll be running out for Maitland tomorrow. Braden Musgrove for Cessnock. So yeah, there's some pretty good retained talent too, I reckon.
Adam, I'm actually very interested in what you're talking about here. Not the footy, the beer drinking. So if there's any free spots there, I'll be up there tomorrow. But, mate, what do you think? You just mentioned a number of ex-NRL players that are playing in your competition. And what do you think it is that draws them to your comp compared to, you know, other competitions? You always hear many players going to that Newcastle comp. Do you have a draw card, mate, or do you just think it's a great competition to be a part of?
Oh look, it's always been a really strong competition, and so I guess and a number of those guys that I mentioned before are coming back to their junior club. So I think it's a combination of guys returning to their junior club. Like Newcastle has always been a great nursery for footy talent. So it's the guys that are coming back to their junior club, and then you know from a Blake Austin point of view, for example, if he's coming back to Super League and doesn't want to play footy full time, well, I would say the Newcastle competition's probably the best competition in the country outside of the NRL and you know possibly New South Wales and Queensland Cup.
And Maitland going for three in a row. That's right, isn't it, Adam?
It is. Maitland are going for three in a row. They've got a really strong junior base. A lot of their players are local juniors, they had several guys in the country rep side last year. There's you know their props Jaden Butterfield and James Taylor are probably you know two of the best props running around outside NRL system. So they've got a very strong squad and have for a few years through their local junior system predominantly.
Butterfield rings a bell. It's not the son of Tony, is it?
I don't think so. No. I actually don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, he was a wonderful player, Tony Butterfield, up there.
No, he's not. He definitely is not.
No, beautiful. What about the incentive for local clubs to have juniors coming through, Adam? Is it a point system up there or a salary cap? How does it all work in terms of spreading the talent? Or if you're a club, you can go and if you're a rich club, you can go and chase whoever you want.
Yeah. Look, competitions like this need something to equalise it, and a salary cap is not really the way to do it because salary caps are really difficult to enforce. So the equalisation measure is a point system, and there is a New South Wales have a generic, I guess, state based point system which is kind of moulded to the different regions. So yeah, we use a state based point system. And part of that is if you retain your local juniors, those players come at 0 points. So the Maitland team that I mentioned before, predominantly local juniors. So even though Maitland is a really strong team, the number of points that they run out on a week to week basis is not as high as others because a lot of their players are local juniors, so they come at no points.
And you're expanding your women's premiership as well this year, Adam.
Yeah, this is really cool. The women's competition in Newcastle has been around for a few years. In fact, I think I read somewhere that 12% of all the women that play rugby league in the state last year played in Newcastle. So again, it's a really strong nursery, and we're trying to elevate that competition into a true pathway competition called the Oporto Women's Premiership. The guys at Oporto have been awesome. Coming on board for that competition, and so yeah, that will be also be part of our match days this year. So there'll be seven teams in that competition, and that will start in a few weeks' time.
Okay, so tomorrow for midday, number 2 sports ground, 5 games back to back, craft beer festival, food trucks, plenty of other activities. Is it best to get tickets before heading there tomorrow? How can people get involved and go and watch?
Oh, you can lob up. You can just lob up to the gate. Whenever you feel like coming along, starts at 12, finishes at 9. We've got some, there's some kids entertainment there. There'll be some Knights players there doing player signings early in the day. So, you know, the way I put it is, you know, this is not just a day for lovers of footy, but this is a day for lovers of a good time. So if you're in and around Newcastle tomorrow, get down to number 2 sports ground from 12 o'clock. Gates open 11:30, actually.
And it looks like you're going to get great weather as well, Adam. So, mate, appreciate you coming on and telling us about it. Have a great season. Well done on getting the concept up and running, and hope it all goes well. Well, race here at Randwick last Saturday, they said it couldn't be done. The keyboard warriors ridiculed the idea of it. And yet, despite a gazillion millimetres of rain, it all went ahead and produced the most fantastic racing, barely chopped out at all, and the man heading it all up with his team, the track manager here at Royal Randwick, Michael Wood, is joining us. Michael, a very good morning to you, mate. How are you?
Morning, that's an intro.
On the spot. Well, well done. And honestly, congratulations. It was just unbelievable considering the amount of rain we had. Just take us briefly through basically your 24 hours from when we left you last Friday.
Yeah, so you blokes brought the rain in, obviously.
Yeah, we're good at that.
But yeah, look, it really didn't stop. So we weren't able to do a great deal. But, we inspected the track. I think we were about three times there on the Friday. And every time the track continued to feel really well. It felt great. So even going home on Friday afternoon, I was still full of confidence. I guess when we got in on the Saturday morning, it absolutely poured at about 5 o'clock. And so the area that sort of come over onto the track, I went over and checked at 5 o'clock, and it was still a good metre to a metre and a half below our, exceeding the threshold of the catchment. So I thought, that's all fine. And then that heavy downpour, I think we got about 30 mils in 20 minutes. And that's what sent that over. But even still, once we got out onto the track and walking the track on Saturday morning, the track felt great. It was only sort of that area that we had any sort of concerns with.
I remember talking to you on Friday morning, and you said that if the sun was out, we'll race. There was no question mark. But did the track play better than what you even thought it would?
Honestly, I thought it would probably chop out a bit more. I knew we ticked all of our boxes sort of from a turf perspective to have it as good as possible, but it's still a lot of rain. You're still going to be a bit of a realist and think, well, they're going to get into this track with big fields. But, it held together really well. I thought the racing was great, and the racing was the star of the show.
I guess it vindicates so much and gives you some lessons to take forward as well.
Yeah, it does. And because we did set out on a path to get Randwick to try and drain better. You know, it's always had this sort of stigma that it's a bog track and all that sort of thing. And it's something I've always wanted to try and break to get it to drain better. So it was certainly vindicating on the day.
Mick, you're just saying then that the track's surprised you, didn't get as chopped up as you thought. I'm assuming you get plenty of opinions from everyone, owners, trainers. Do you just go with your gut, mate, on a day like that when it's pouring? Do you just stick to what you know, or do you take advice from people on the last minute?
No, I think we stick to our gut. You know, I've got a good team around me that, you know, it's not sort of just me out there. So we're out there every day looking at the track. So we like to think we know it back to front. And if the track continues to walk well and you know, is great, then, you know, we'll run with that. If we ever had the thought that the track was no good and it wasn't going to be safe, well, you know, we're here to tell you what the track's like, and we'd say that. So the messaging that we're putting forward is always just what we're feeling.
Well, last week, I suppose you had to be nimble, think on your feet, because so many things were happening, so many moving parts. This week you just put your feet up and had a cigar and a pina colada, I suppose.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Track managing with Laurie Daly. Yeah.
Pina colada, that's what I did when I worked at Queanbeyan Golf Club.
How could we forget?
Yeah, no, I was reminded,
a greenkeeper, mate.
Reminded he was a former greenkeeper at the end of the week.
Trophy manufacturer.
I've done everything. Not good at anything, but done everything.
No, we just, I guess we, it's almost business as usual, really. Yeah. You know, we get through that day, and it was great for the club, you know, great for racing that we managed to race last week. But the focus goes straight onto what we sort of already had planned out for this week, and try and have the track as good as possible for day two.
What's the track and the rail then?
So we've got a soft six at the moment, but certainly not far off a soft five. Okay. Whether it's there this morning, we'll inspect the track at seven. But I think it may even be there this afternoon and possibly into a good track tomorrow at some point, but we'll see.
Mate, it's been amazing
how that goes through. But we've pushed the rail out to four. The initial plan was to be three, but just with those bigger fields, and they did edge off the fence around that sort of 500 to 400 metre mark. The 4 metre position gets them off everything around that turn, so it's not a mark on it where they're going to be coming around. But obviously, you look in the straight, and you're going to see where they've raced because they did tend to get off the fence a little bit. But the boys have put minimal fill out there, so yeah, it should look good there for tomorrow.
Well done again, and can't wait for another great day's racing tomorrow. Do you like anything this week?
I caught a sneaky tip yesterday of Razors in race two for tomorrow, so I said it was over the odds and should go well. So
get the Alford horse.
I just caught a whiff of that yesterday.
So take that.
Nice. I was told I should have tipped Celestial Legend last week, so I probably should have tipped you into that, but my mind was elsewhere.
You had a bit going on, okay. Race two, number five, Razors, $8.280 the place. Jamie Carr riding for Godolphin Wide Barrier. Thanks for joining us again, mate, and hope all goes well tomorrow.
Thanks, boys.
Welcome back. Just some scores this morning. Now, there's Europa League quarterfinal first legs. Roma leading Milan 1-0. And that's in Milan. Atalanta at Anfield leading Liverpool 2-0, 81st minute. Bayer Leverkusen and West Ham is scoreless, and Benfica are 2-1 up over Marseille. The Masters, of course, Bryson DeChambeau sitting pretty in the clubhouse, 7-under-65. Denny Willett, 3 shots back, is second, and he's shot a 4-under-68. Where's our man? Cam Davis has had a good start, and Adam Pengilly, remember he had that Aussie handicap bet. Cam Davis, 3-under through 9 holes, the Aussie. Cameron Smith, 2-under through 10. Now, Rory McIlroy, just some other names here, 1-under through 12. Tiger Woods, 1-under through 2. Got himself into trouble on the second hole, but managed to make par. Adam Scott's even through 3 holes. Jason Day, even through 2 holes.
Now, Mido, you mentioned soccer. And this could be the biggest story out of the weekend, all right? And it's the elephant in the room. We haven't mentioned it this morning. Now, the great Josh Grubb Reynolds, he's heading to Allianz Stadium tomorrow night. And he's going to watch Sydney FC take on the Wanderers. And you are going to be in the Cove. Now, have you worked out what shirt you're wearing? Have you worked out how you're going to arrive? Have you worked out whether you need security, your own personal security? Are you going to be taking your shirt off when they score a goal and swinging it around? What can we expect from the Grub tomorrow night?
Look, Loz, I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I can't tell you exactly my plans because it's sort of a bit of a hooligan code because we can't tell you where we're going to turn up. And that's the thing. We don't want to tell the Wanderers.
And we're not promoting hooligans.
No, we don't promote hooliganism on this show.
I don't even know what hooliganism is, to be honest. But
it's kicking the crap out of each other. So
I won't be touching anyone. No, yeah. Let's just put that out there. But I will be carrying on deluxe.
Yeah, you will be getting into it.
I'm going to go to the souvenir shop and buy lots of the gear.
Yep. Are you going to have someone's name on your back?
Probably not. Because I'm just a fan of the whole team.
Right.
I actually feel very, very special, actually. I got a birthday message from all the boys.
Did you?
Yeah. Which I thought was very nice.
From City FC?
Nice. Yeah. A couple of the boys. So I'm going to watch it tomorrow morning when I wake up to pump me up.
Yep.
Pump me right up because...
And who's going with you?
Five of me mates.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be an interesting crew.
Yeah.
I just hope we make it there.
And are they all footy fans?
Yeah.
Yep.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they... it'll be something different, Loz, but I'm very, very excited. I take my derbies very seriously.
If I was going to one football game, and I haven't been to an A-League game...
Yeah, you want to go to that one.
That's the one I'd like to go to. Because I remember when they first started that rivalry... And the crowds and the atmosphere would come through on the television. And it was just, it reminded me of the, you know, when you play football overseas in England, you know, they just chant and cheer and carry on. And hopefully there'll be that type of atmosphere there tomorrow night.
Yep, I'm pumped. A couple of goals, hopefully.
Wonder if they'll have a chant ready for you. You might get a chant. I'm being serious.
If I get a chant, I've lived a good life.
I want That's you to, it. If you get a chant, film it.
All right.
Because I want to put it on social.
All right, done.
All right, beautiful.
Okay, I'm looking for Loz's multi on the app.
It's not there.
Why isn't it there? Oh, no, there it is. Mm. So I've found it. So for those on the text line looking for it, click on sports, today's offers. Then you click on sports again, scroll down, and there's the big sports breakfast best.
Beautiful. Yeah, so it's race 7, number 11. Sorry, I didn't know where you were going.
I just pass you the ball. Yeah,
I had my mind on something else, which I'll come back to. So it's race 7, number 11, Manzois, top 4. Race 8, number 8, Via Sestina to win. And that's paying $8 if you want to be a part of it. So, what I was thinking before you rudely interrupted me.
It's my fault.
Yeah.
Before you gave him the short
I gave him the soft pass.
So, I'm still working on my bets friends.
Okay.
All right. How we're going to work it.
But I can get...
Well, I can... Well, IT people, you know, they don't work as quickly as I do. So they're still working on it. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to pick 5 people out. So put your name and your horse that you think will win tomorrow, and I will get it up. I will pick 5. I'll tell you at the end of the show who they'll be, and they'll be on the Bets Friends page today. And we'll track to see how their tips go.
Right. Even you,
but
Gary,
I can only do 5. I can only do 5 okay. at this stage.
So state a little case. Text your best tomorrow in 0419 767.
And I'm reliably informed that will be up by 9 o'clock. All right.
Beautiful.
So we can do 5 before 9.
How did it go last week?
Well, I didn't think it through when I just blurted it out.
No, we know that. Yeah.
So I've worked on it a little bit this week, and no one was really prepared for it. So we still need some manoeuvring, and we've got to get a few more people involved in it to get this working. But eventually, it'll get there.
So you just feel like you've got the great idea, and you're
yeah.
just
yeah. So
not everyone's
ideas,
really
man.
On the same level
yeah.
as you.
I can throw. I'm a bit like a blocker. I can throw ideas out, but I don't know how they work,
how they blossom.
Yeah.
Evan, hello to you, mate. Where are you currently? Which hole? Who are you following?
Good morning, Mido and the boys. Mate, I've just gone out for a couple of holes, walking around with Minwoo Lee, and he's got a crazy scorecard. At one stage, he was 4 over par 3 6, and he got back to even par with an eagle and a couple of birdies. So, all happening around the grounds of Augusta National today. I am currently back in the media centre, so I've crafted a nice, quiet spot to chat to you boys.
Bryson DeChambeau has had a great first round.
Absolutely. You know, he's just come out of nowhere. Hasn't been playing particularly well this year on the LIV Golf Tour, but has shot a 7 under par 65. He's currently leader in the clubhouse for the first round of the Masters. 33 of his last 4 holes, and was just, I mean, he had a hole in one on the par 3 contest yesterday. So if that was any sign that he was coming into form, then that's it. And he currently leads the Masters at 7 under, and a guy with his length, the way he can attack the par 5s, he might be tough to reel in from here on in.
Evan, how the Aussies started?
Yeah, Josh, pretty well, actually. We've got Cam Davis, the lanky bloke, hit it long and straight. He's 3 under par through 9 holes, so he's really humming, and he's got a couple of par 5s in the back 9, and number 12, the famous par 3. He's playing pretty gentle today, so there's a few opportunities out there for him to chase down the 4 shots he's given up to Bryson DeChambeau at the moment. And, of course, our very own Cam Smith, he's 2 under par through 10 holes. He's had a nice little start. He's clearly feeling better after the mystery illness that rocked his Masters preparation. So the boys are firing. Then we got... Oh, sorry, boys. This is incredibly annoying, but this is the PA announcement at inside the media centre at Augusta National. They're announcing Bryson that is coming into the interview room. So thanks to the communications people for that. But where was I? The Aussies. So Jaydane and Adam Scott are currently even par. Then they've got Minwoo Lee. It's currently one over. As I said before, he's had a bit of a roller coaster around. And then our poor amateur from Victoria, Jasper Stubbs, had a bit of a rough day. He was one under through three holes and flying. Finished up eight over par, 80 on the dot. So that's our Aussie boys, the six Aussie boys after round one, and some of them are still out on four.
Well, I see Scotty Scheffler after 12. He's three under, and he's just struck this ball beautifully off the tee on the 13th.
Yeah, exactly. Scotty Scheffler, you know, world number one, few wins coming into the Masters, the 2022 Masters champion. It was a fait accompli that he was going to be up high on the leaderboard and be a little bit of a boring Masters if he were to run away with another one of them. So hopefully those guys really keep him in line. But he's three under par through 12 holes. As you said, striking the ball like a robot, like he normally does. And I dare say he'd have a couple more birdies coming in, and then he should finish around the 5-6 under mark and be chasing Bryson DeChambeau.
We're just watching Tiger. Birdie putt on the third hole. It looks like he's pushed it left. Yes, he has, but a few deep breaths before his opening tee shot. Played the first hole perfectly and got himself out of trouble on the second hole. It's been a pretty good start here for Tiger. One under through three, Evan.
Absolutely. I just tweeted this stat a few minutes ago. He's only birdied the first hole in the first round three times in his 26 years at the Masters. And
wow.
Anytime, if you had said to Tiger Woods fans before this first round, he'd be one under par through two holes and missing a birdie putt on the third hole, you would absolutely have taken it. Anything under par with Tiger is great. It adds that extra oomph to the Masters or any tournament for that matter. So one under par through three holes, we'll take that. Hopefully have a few more coming in and get himself in contention and really create that electricity that the, you know, famous leaderboards around Augusta National are famous for.
I should know this. You tipped us Will Zalatoris, didn't you, yesterday?
I definitely did tip Will Zalatoris. I apologise for those PA announcements again, guys. There's not much I can do because
it's all good.
So I don't know. If the listeners don't know this, it's quite a famous rule at Augusta National. You're not allowed to take your phone out onto the course. That includes media. So the only place I can talk to you is where these announcements are coming over the PA system. But sorry, Mido, what did you ask me just then?
Zalatoris, you'd be pretty happy with how your selection's going. He's just fallen short with a birdie putt at 14, but he's three under par through 14 holes, Zalatoris.
Yeah, cracking start from Zalatoris. He was actually the group behind Minwoo Lee, so I hung back on the fifth hole to watch him. He was making a bit of a disaster of the fifth hole, which is typically the most difficult hole at Augusta National. And he chipped in for par like a weekend hacker off the back of the green. That kept him, I think he was one under par at the time. Yeah, he was one under par at the time. So three under par, absolutely taking that from my tip. It was on the Betfred. I think we got him at $34, I believe, Mido, yesterday.
Yep,
so
correct.
I might have put a cheeky stake on it myself. $34 is juicy for a guy that's finished second at the Augusta before and was second at Riviera only a couple of months ago. So fingers crossed he keeps riding that.
Jesus, Kiwi Ryan Fox always looks like he plays consistent golf. He's three under after 18, so he shot a 69. So he'd be happy with that, wouldn't he?
Oh, he'd be electric. I actually spoke to Foxy yesterday. The listeners might not know, he's actually the son of the famous All Black, Grant Fox, one of the best All Blacks of all time. Just, you know, he looks like a rugby player. He looks like he should be playing front row for the All Blacks. Just an absolute monster of a human. Blast the golf ball off the tee. Had a really amazing 2022 season that basically got him onto the PGA, European Tour season that got him onto the PGA Tour. But I just spoke to him yesterday, and he had just lost all confidence. He's got a three-year-old and an 11-month-old. They're basically, him and his wife are living out of hotels with the kids. He's on that kind of PGA Tour graduate program where they don't really know where they're playing or they're playing the kind of crappy events and wait to get into the good events. So he had lost all his confidence. And he told me he had zero expectations coming into this Masters. And he thought, oh, well, what better place to go around and play some golf and just see if something happens. And something has happened. He's three under par. He shot a nice 69 and he's actually right in contention.
Any Greg Norman news? Seen the shark walking around causing any ruckus anywhere? any discussions, Evan, with the shark?
Yes, Mido. You wouldn't believe it. The great white shark has swum through the front gates again at Augusta National for a second day in a row. Ticketed patron And the controversy is not coming from Greg Norman today. It's actually coming from Greg Norman Jr. He's put on social media a lengthy tweet saying that he accused Augusta National of denying his old man tickets to the Masters. Said, quote unquote, that, you know, Greg Norman Sr. went through the proper channels but was denied. And he walked through the gates like every other punter with a ticket in hand. And he's on site today at Augusta National again. Some of the other Aussie reporters that are here walked a couple of holes with him and said that he was just enjoying himself and following those 13 lead golfers that are in the field. But, you know, we I suppose we have to now go and verify with the club whether they actually did deny Norman an entry through the proper channels. And usually Augusta National invites a lot of former major winners to just come and have a ticket for the week. Like one of the great Australians, Ian Baker Finch, the 1991 British Open champion, typically, well, he comes here to analyse and commentate on the CBS broadcast, but he also usually comes just as a guest at the club, and Norman was allegedly denied that entry.
Amazing. Where that's all landed with one of the greats. But, mate, really appreciate your time as always, and we'll check in on Monday morning our time. So enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, boys. Hopefully you'll be checking in with me for an Aussie victory, and hopefully I might be one beer and a few hundred words deep already, but if not, we'll go with Taurus. Let's get him over the line.
That sounds good. Thank you so much. Evan Priest there at Augusta National giving us an update. Has Scheffler just put that in the creek at 13? Ray's Creek? It looks like that's just gone in the creek. So trouble for Scotty there at 13. Okay, if you're loving the Masters and you're keen to see the best golfers in the world, right here in Australia, Live Golf is for you. We'll be there broadcasting from the Grange Golf Club there in Adelaide, Friday, April 26, ahead of day one of Live Golf. It's golf but louder, so don't miss this epic weekend of shotgun starts, fan village fun, and headline music acts, including Fisher, Flight Facilities, and Tones and I as well. Tickets on sale now at livegolf.com. And children under 12 are free at the gate. Can't wait to see what it's all about. What are you? What are you doing?
Just trying to get your attention.
Well, okay, it's all yours.
You got it.
Go for it.
Bet's friends. All right, if you want to be up on that page, because I've got a chance to put five people up there today, you've got to put your name there with not only the horse you think's going to win, but your name. All right, because I want to see how you go. You just can't put a random tip up there.
Okay,
yeah. So I want someone's name.
Couple.
So if you said, like, Mitch from Robbo, who was on there last week, that's what you got to do. You got to say, I'm Paul from wherever.
Well, we've got a couple here already. Morning, boys. Law's my best for tomorrow. Ramwick Race 5, number one, Osmosis. Had an excuse last start. Won both starts on slow and has not missed a place at this distance. Trained by Mr. Personality Bjorn, and he's a handsome horse. Thanks, Larissa. Sending that one through. Ramwick Race 2, number 5, Razors, goes up in weight, troughs back in class, handles soft ground, get on, says Troy. Best for Ramwick Race 10, number 3, Wee Nessie, peaks third up, great jockey and trainers, and great barrier each way all day, the Canberra Chicken. One more here. Morning, boys, my best tomorrow is Shadows of Love. Ultra consistent mare, just needs luck from the draw, and Kim is overdue to win the provincial championship. Russell at Penrith.
That is better.
Sending that one.
Thank you, everyone, for doing this as well.
Was that Mick Woods? Did he tip that Razors as well? Didn't he?
He did.
Oh, yep. I'm getting on. I have to.
Have to.
That's two.
Ali Mosley, a very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, Mido. How are you guys going?
Outstanding. Beautiful to be trackside on a great morning at Royal Randwick, and. Well, the feature is the $5 million Queen Elizabeth Stakes tomorrow via Sestina, $2.30. Loz has got it to win in the multi. Still Pride of Jenny, good money for her at $3.80. Could it be the last time we see Cascadian at $9? Mr. Brightside, $10. Plus De Carousel, $11. Che Wolf, $13. Adding interest, the three-year-old with Tab, 20-1 and longer the rest. How do you see the feature tomorrow, Ali?
So I think via Sestina has showed that there's so much chat around her being possibly the best horse in Australia at the moment, and she hasn't done a great deal yet to prove that. We've only seen her first up when she ran here in the round, but she was a dominant winner in the way that she was able to show a turn of foot off the slow speed. Shows that she's obviously a very handy mare, a six-year-old. She's not much to look at when you see her physically, but she's got a serious motor in there, and I know that I think James McDonald galloped her this week and was really pleased with how she's coming along. She was, what did it work out to be, about $6 or $7 million Australian her purchase price there from Arcana. So at this stage, I can't steer away from her, but I'm sticking with Mr. Brightside as an each-way chance because I think this is the first time we've been able to see him, and this is exactly what Ben Hayes said, and I'm about to go in and see him at the stables this morning, which is pretty exciting, and give him a pat. Ben Hayes said he hasn't seen a soft track all prep, and that's exactly what he wants. He wants to get his toe in the ground, and he really just jarred up the last time we saw him in Sydney. I think it was in the... what's the King's race? I always forget the name, the new King's race.
King Charles?
That's it. Sorry, King Charles. I haven't forgotten your name already. It's just too early in the morning. he jarred up there a little bit, so I think he'll really enjoy getting his toe back in the ground here. He should be able to sit off the speed and swoop late. So I think I'm going to have something each way on Mr. Brightside, but Via Sistina is most certainly the one to beat there, and a credit to Joe Pryor for backing Chael Wolf up and having a throw at the stumps there. And even Plastic Carousel, I mean, she was, I think they've had €4 million for her at Arcana, and she had everyone on her. She had Yulong, obviously the eventual buyers, but Coolmore and Northern Farm were both in the bidding process. And I watched her gallop on Tuesday morning at Breakfast with the Stars, and she's come on beautifully. So she's acclimatised really well, and the improvement that I've seen from her in her first to what will be her second up run in Australia this weekend is great. So, you know, you could even have something on her. I think there is a bit of value around Via Sistina, but part of Jenny could come and upset us all and just do what she does, which I hope she doesn't.
Ali, the Sydney Cup looks a very open affair. Who are you leaning towards?
I'm leaning towards Athabascan, and he's a horse I've followed for quite a long time now. I've backed him more times than I can count, and I've probably tipped him on this show more times than I can count as well. They elected not to step him out of the 3200 in a Melbourne Cup last prep, and John just said he wanted to wait one more prep to give him that time that he needed. So we see him over 3200 for the first time. He gets in well at the weight. I thought he was great last time out when we saw him in the Tancred, and I've been a fan of this horse for a while. He's 850 now. I think he's come in a little bit because he was $10. I thought he was a nice each-way play there. But I think, you know, compared to Circle of Fire and Ashron, who are $4.80 and $6 respectively, he's the value there at 850 for me. So Athabascan, and he's got the right man aboard at the moment in Tyler Schiller.
Al, just with my multi, I've got Via Sistina to win, but I've also thrown in the Sydney Cup, man, Zoyce to run top four.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I can't get a read on Manzoyce at the moment. He's sort of off the boil, I guess, a little bit this preparation, you could argue, although most recently I think he was second there behind Post Impressionist, so who's since come out and was a little bit flattened for his second up run. So it's a tricky one because obviously he's a Victoria Derby winner, so he's got the form on the board, but he has just been somewhat off the boil this preparation. So deep into the campaign now, fitness obviously no issue, and... Look, I'd love to be with you because I think he's such a nice horse and a nice type of horse, but I'm just a little bit concerned about his
form. That was a vote of confidence for you.
No, just tell me you think it's shit, Al.
No, I don't.
Really no, be nice. Come on. Say it to my face.
Tell him he's got no idea what he's talking about.
No, Loz, I think you do a wonderful job, and I tell you what, you'll probably outdo me. So I don't want to.
No, no one can outdo you because you are a star. Talking about the star, this star Australian Oaks, this filly from New Zealand, Orchestral. Does she just win?
$1.65.
No, I reckon we can get her beat, and I don't want to get her beat, to be quite honest with you. But I think Autumn Angel can beat her. Just hearing whispers from the track, and her moods is very bullish about her chances on the back up. It sets up much better for her this week. She's come through it in great order. I was chatting to one of the boys this week who rides her and said he could barely hold her. She's come through so well. So I think Autumn Angel on the back up, the way that it sets up for her and she just gets in better here, I think could certainly turn the tables on them. She's got to beat, obviously, Zardozia and Orchestral. I do feel as though Orchestral is a serious filly. And when you see her physically, she's an interesting horse because she's got this scope, but she's got the strength and everything's so balanced about her. And she doesn't look like that typical rangy Oaks type of filly that you see. But and I know James McDonald said she even rides like a colt when you sit on her. So she might just be too tough, but I'm a little bit worried about how deep she is into the preparation. And I, to be honest, I want us to have a champion. So I want her to win, but I think Autumn Angel might beat her.
Your best bets for day two of the championships or
we'll take bets anywhere, Ali. What do you like?
Everyone's been teasing me because I've been throwing in a few in New Zealand, so people have been saying, well, you've got any influence at Ozaki?
We love them.
But no, I've got one in the first, actually. It's a horse called Rasp, who looks a really progressive type, gets him well at the weights. He's got 55, Jamie Carr aboard. He's drawn well. We see him in the Fernhill Mile. He's a colt by Street Boss. And if you watch his last start run at Wyong, he did everything wrong over 13.50. In fact, I think he was on the wrong leg until he got into the straight. And once he straightened up, switched legs, he hit the line strongly. And he's scopey. He covers a lot of ground when he gallops. It just looks like he's crying out for the mile or further. So, albeit it's a huge step up in class and he's got some handy ones he needs to beat at 9.50, he's definitely worth having something on. So that's Rasp in race one in the Fernhill Mile.
Number seven, race one, number seven. Okay, keep going.
Okay, in the Percy Sykes, I'm with, again, I think Peter Moody and Catherine Coleman can have another great day. They can clean up and take home some of our Sydney prize money back down the highway in Nisa. We all saw what she did there in the Golden Slipper. She's since gone back down to Victoria and come back up here in super order again. I know she's travelled up well. She's $5 at the moment, $1.90 the place. So even as a place bet, I think she's certainly worth a chance there and needs it each way. But I think she can beat Lady of Camelot. Then into the Arrowfield, another horse I saw gallop on Tuesday morning and a horse I've always been a huge fan of. And it's hard not to be when you see him physically. He's just an absolutely cracking type. He missed the better part of his early two-year-old preparation. He just had a couple of setbacks. And now as a three-year-old, he looks the real deal. He's furnished. He's taken so much improvement. I thought he had a bit of improvement to come first up when we saw him there in the Derby Munro, and he's tightened up beautifully, galloped really well on Tuesday morning, which you, if anyone wants to go back and have a look, you should be able to see it there on Twitter. He just worked through so well. He didn't even get let off the bridle. I think Tommy was on him and he just absolutely cruised. So Schwartz each way for me in the Arrowfield Sprint.
Race five, number six, Schwartz.
Yeah. Yep, and then in the last race, there's two I like around Redcar because I think we can get her beaten as well the favourite, and it's Tashi and Soltaire, again another one I saw on Tuesday morning. So I think let's have a little something on Tashi and Soltaire to beat Redcar.
Yeah, John O'Shea said Soltaire's going pretty well, and we spoke to him yesterday as well. So that's race 10, number 4, Tashi, and race 10, number 14. Soltaire. Ali, you enjoyed day two.
Thank you, and apologies to John O'Shea in advance. I just realised I've tipped half his stable this weekend.
You can tell him, you can apologise yourself.
No photos or mocks this week.
No, thanks so much, Ali.
Thanks, guys.